Welcome today to our interview series with Outstanding Professionals. I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and I'm conducting an exclusive interview with Bruce Cowper, top international security authority and chief security advisor at Microsoft Canada. Bruce, thank you for coming in today to share your deep insights with the audience and continuing on with this podcast series.
Absolutely my pleasure, and thanks for inviting me.
Bruce, I'm going to take it a little bit of a different tact in this next question, and then I'm going to give you sort of seven phrases or words, and I just want your comments or tips on each one of them. So first of all, I'm going to start with the word authentication.
So authentication is absolutely fundamental to essentially a security solution. Let me put it in a couple of different sort of contexts. If I'm a consumer and I'm going online and I'm using the services of a bank, I want to make sure that through an authentication mechanism, they know who I am and can provide me, and only me, with the relevant services. Fundamental to authentication really comes down to, is things like your identities. You're often using your identities to be able to provide authentication, whether that's a username and password or whether that's sort of other mechanisms. And what, like biometrics or others, what we're seeing in the security world is looking at authentication really from a far broader perspective. So one of the big challenges that a lot of organizations have are things like the number of digital identities, the number of usernames and passwords, or number of claims that we might have. And so what we're seeing is a lot of organizations bringing the idea of authentication or successful authentication into their organizations from a much broader perspective. And so really the big tip there is, as people are thinking about architecture, thinking about how they interact with their users, whether they be consumers or whether they're in the enterprise, is authentication is one of the sort of fundamental components that helps us understand security, helps us implement security, and helps us essentially control security within the organization. And so the one big ask there is for organizations, and tips there is for organizations to look at authentication from a much broader perspective than we have right now.
Okay, so we'll go into my second out of my seven items here, and that is phishing and countermeasures. Any tips there?
Well, we see that the vast number of phishing attacks are still aimed at things like the larger organizations in Canada especially. So that would be the banks and the government and others. English language is also certainly the most targeted language. And countries like Canada, where you have a reasonably affluent population who are perhaps well-connected in terms of broadband and internet access, become phenomenal targets for things like phishing attacks. There's a couple of trends actually that we've started to see, and one is that the tools behind the phishing attacks are becoming much better in terms of automation. So we're seeing smaller and smaller businesses that are essentially being targeted. And I'm not necessarily talking about their employees, I'm talking about the businesses, the smaller businesses who have online presence in Canada. And customers who interact with them online being targeted for phishing-type attacks. There are some interesting tips that can come about from this. We see so many phishing attacks that happen again and again and again, and the sophistication of those attacks is improving. You used to be able to spot them through things like misspelling or bad graphics or bad representation of the sites that they were trying to copy. These days, it's incredibly hard to spot the phishing attacks. Having said that, a lot of it can go down to some fairly fundamental decisions that people make. Number one is if you're being asked for personal private information by either a website or an email, it's really important to understand, well, that information is mine. I own that. What is that going to be of use to the organization that I'm giving that to? For example, if I get an email from a bank that says, we need to validate your details, Well, is that the bank actually sending that information or that email to me, or is it somebody else trying to gather that information? And most businesses within Canada take phishing very, very seriously, and therefore have policies. They don't send out these types of emails. They don't sort of post onto websites, click here to validate your information. The rule of thumb there is, if you're at all worried about it or if you're unsure, if it's, say, a bank, give the main bank number a call and ask to speak to their security people and ask them whether this is a legitimate email or a legitimate request. Because at the end of the day, they can be a good source of information, especially if you're worried. The second thing we see a lot with phishing attacks is that there's a lot of information that's posted online. A good website that I use on a regular basis is Snopes.com, where I often sort of refer family and friends and others to, because people will post information about phishing attacks and other types of luring onto sites like Snopes.com, so that I can understand, is that something that other people are seeing? And in fact, what I often get people to do is, before they sort of email me and say, is this a phishing attack, is to go to those sites and perhaps do some of their own research. But certainly one of the big things when I think about those types of social engineering attacks is because they get so, they're so complex, and in many cases, they're so hard to spot. Very often, what they're trying to do is essentially drive a behavior that people perhaps wouldn't do ordinarily. And so, to put it in context, I'd like to get people to think about the information that they share by asking themselves, is this information, or does this person really need to have this information? Is this something that should be public domain? And if the answer is no, it shouldn't be sort of known, sort of beyond, like perhaps you wouldn't go up to a stranger in the street and give them your cell phone number. The same thing applies online. And to really think about the information that we give up freely. I think one of the challenges right now is there's still a big lack of understanding about what is reasonable information to give up and what isn't.
Okay, and the third out of my seven items here would be click fraud and your tips on that area.
So click fraud has been around for a long time, but it has, in the last few years, because of things like automation, it's essentially become a lot easier for the perpetrators of things like click fraud and others to really leverage the tools to try and sort of make it essentially a bigger business. And one of the big things about click fraud is that many of the challenges I see out there are coming out with things like offers that are perhaps too good to be true. And if they're offers online and they look too good to be true, I can pretty much guarantee that they are too good to be true. When I look at a lot of the fraud that happens, what I'm seeing with things like click fraud from an advertising perspective is we almost, in many cases, come to accept things like online advertising as in place a tax for using things like services, using things like software that may be paid for by the sort of the advertising revenue. And so the challenge, I think, is that we almost accept that there is going to be sort of advertising in many, or that we're going to be faced with advertising. And so the challenge, of course, is if you are getting organizations whose primary revenue sources are things like advertising from sort of online and essentially the number of clicks, we see a lot of the sort of the automated tools trying to exploit that, but also things like the advertising becoming a sort of a bigger tax, and therefore people accepting that that's what they're going to see.
And my fourth item here would be the human factor in security.
One of the interesting things that has happened in terms of trends is really towards security, or the attacks being targeted towards people. So it's things like social engineering, it's the use of things like social networking sites, the use of sort of other social components from essentially attack organizations and individuals alike. Now, the interesting thing is that we found that training awareness and education for people, whether that be, excuse me, from an online safety perspective or whether that's in an enterprise situation, is one of the biggest ways, and in fact in many cases one of the easiest ways, to remove a lot of the low-hanging fruit from a security perspective. I've been involved with a number of investigations over the years that the root challenge has ultimately come down to the lack of training, awareness, and education for people around security. So a good example is that I was working at an airline dealing with a security challenge that they had had. And we eventually traced the challenge back to information that had been given out by an individual within the company that had enabled an attacker to get just enough information to essentially start the ball rolling. Now, that was a fairly expensive exercise for the airline, but it also meant that there was a loss of customer perception, or a reduced customer perception around the company because of the problems that they had had. Another organization that I did a lot of work with a while ago found that a lot of the security breaches that they were actually having, and a lot of the impact that they were having within their organization, was through things like the information that people were sharing between each other. So we find that a lot of the security breaches in an organization emanate internally. But we find that there's, in many cases, a lot of the information that people will essentially share simply maybe because they're asked to share it, or through things like sort of bribery mechanisms. I was actually reading a study recently that was talking about that most people will share, for example, their password if they're asked. Many people within an organization will share their usernames and passwords for rewards. Maybe that's a candy bar. Maybe that's a different type of reward. And so the value that an individual places on information like that can often be very, very low. So helping people understand the impact of things like the sharing information, whether it be on internally or externally from an organization, can certainly be a big part of that in trying to deal with that side of it. But I see a lot of organizations tout that perhaps the people within their organizations are actually one of the weakest links. And whilst I agree with that on sort of one hand, I also think there's a lot an organization can do to help raise that training and awareness and education component, and also put controls in place so that they can help people make the appropriate decisions. And I think once we sort of really get to that stage where people are properly educated about security and we have the proper processes and controls in place, I think that we will have essentially a far more secure environment.
You know, my fifth topic area out of seven then would be on cryptography and your essential tips in that area.
So one of the big things about cryptography is that it is an ever moving set of goalposts. There are a lot of the cryptographic processes that have been put in place and been leveraged for years, that through the advent of things like technology, greater computing power, etc., have been rendered obsolete. Having said that, what we find is that a lot of organizations that invest in things like sort of cryptographic mechanisms for protecting documents. They leverage things like secure communication using cryptographic technologies and processes. Generally stand a far lower risk of having things like security breaches. From a consumer perspective, it may be as simple as when I'm deploying a wireless network in my house. Well, one of the first things I should really think about doing is making sure I have an encrypted connection, that my wireless networking is set up to encrypt data. And that's a function that's readily accepted now and built into every type of wireless networking device. So it's very straightforward to do. But we still find a lot of people using sort of unauthenticated and unencrypted networks just because perhaps that's how they come out of the box. When we look at organizations, there's a fundamental shift that's starting to happen. And that shift is away from point-in-time security solutions or protecting your networks from the perimeter out. In many cases, it's almost flipping that on its head and saying, how about we protect the information that's held within the organization? It's that information, that intellectual property, which is essentially part of the lifeblood of the organization. And so we're seeing a lot of organizations now angling towards using things like encryption within their documents, so that by default they're encrypted and have to be decrypted to be able to access them effectively. We look at a lot of organizations, rather than just storing information on a hard drive, they'll now use encryption technologies to enable them to encrypt the data as it resides there on the computer. And so we see a lot of organizations really leveraging sort of cryptography and sort of in as part of their overall solution. Now, the big tip from that perspective is it doesn't necessarily have to be very complex. When we start looking at cryptography, it's again one of these areas where there are an awful lot of choices. There are an awful lot of misnomers. But what we find is that there are a lot of organizations now who are supporting things like cryptographic technologies from a vendor perspective. They're making sure that they provide solutions to their customers that involve things like cryptography, etc. So is it a holy grail? No. Is the technology going to be the panacea in that perspective? The answer is no, especially when you bring the human factor and others into the equation. But certainly we find a lot of organizations really thinking about how they leverage cryptography within their organizations and within their security approaches.
Okay, Bruce, let's get to our sixth item in my list of seven. That's network security. Any tips there?
So the big tip around network security is really to think about it from beyond the point in time. So many organizations have looked at network security and equated it to things like firewalls, equated it to things like IDS and IPS, intruder detection systems and others, so that they can do traffic monitoring. What I often ask people to think about in terms of network security is understanding more fundamentally things like what devices are attached to those networks. What's the information that flows across those networks, and where and how and why? And part of the reason for that is almost getting people to take a more holistic approach to network security, so that what they're essentially doing is understanding the layers that might be put in place. So when we start to look at network security, it may be as simple in a first step as perimeter type security. Then it may be the next sort of level of, well, once somebody is in is now connected to that network, what do we do? And in many cases, organizations are using things like network access protection, network access control, to understand things like compliancy. is that user or computer meant to be on this network? Are they in compliance with our policies around security, around their sort of configuration, etc.? And if they're not, I'm going to sort of react appropriately. And so then we look at the sort of the data layer and the communications layers to understand, are we implementing security at those layers as well, or the appropriate levels of security? For example, should I as a user actually be able to communicate with every machine on the network, or is my sort of sphere of influence only a subset of that? And so the big thing from a network security tip perspective is almost to take as much of a holistic look at network security and think about it from the big picture rather than looking at it as a point in time or as a from the sort of the perimeter, the traditional view perhaps.
And then in my list of seven, protocol design. Any tips there?
So it's interesting that we see a lot of protocols that have been developed over the years. A great example is SIP. And we also see a lot of the protocols leveraged within the SCADA environments for equipment that perhaps had a different approach to security. And so what we're starting to see is a lot of organizations now looking at how do they then layer on security on top of a lot of the protocols they use, a lot of the communication mechanisms. So in the example of SIP, very, very few people will now leverage an unencrypted SIP connection because SIP has no inherent security within it. And so what we see is then people layering on things like transport layer security, mutual authentication between endpoints and devices, and also then looking at how we sort of encrypt or manage the traffic as it sort of flows across the network, whether that's virtual LANs or other sort of mechanisms. And so the big thing that we're seeing with protocol design changes is really twofold. One is how we deal with some of the legacy protocols and the legacy technologies that we have in place that leverages those protocols, and how can we layer security onto those. And the sort of flip side of that is when we start to look at decision-making processes around technology adoption is also looking at the appropriate protocols, especially the standards that are out there for the protocols, and making sure that the choices we make include security, so it's not a bolt-on afterwards, that it is part of the overall design and approach within an organization, within a piece of software, a piece of technology. So the big sort of tip there is essentially to understand what are the tools and processes and technologies that you have within, say, an application or a tool or a service, that leverage the that essentially are maybe built into the protocols or that need to be layered on top. And certainly, as I say, the big shift that we're seeing right now is towards far more protocols that include security within their design.
You know, it's clear, Bruce, that you have this sort of amazing breadth of experience, and I have a series of other questions I'm very sort of curious about, and perhaps we can do a sort of a drill down in another podcast if you'd be interested in that.
Oh, very much so, yes.
And in that, I'd get into things like the classic Orange Book approach to security and its limitations and some of the security tools available in operating systems and the whole idea of web and wireless technologies, security defects in software and identifying them and so on and so forth. So, okay, we'll schedule that, and that'll be where we can drill down into some of these other topic areas in quite a bit of detail. I'm going to sort of broaden this again, and what do you feel are the 10 most important tips or 5 most important roadmap-level tips involving security?
I would say that when we start to look at the roadmap, the biggest thing is making sure that security is built into everything that you're doing. We see a lot of organizations that are now building security in as a fundamental component, so that it's not a sort of an afterthought. The second big thing is from a roadmap level is when you're starting to look at technologies, think of them as business enablers. In other words, don't let the technologies dictate what can and can't be done within the business. So part of the reason I say that is because there are so many technologies out there, and people are using criteria like security, management, reliability, etc., as key decision-making factors. And in many cases, what we're finding is that with those products that have things like security sort of built into the process, that have management designed into the system, those become an awful lot easier to sort of manage, maintain, etc. The next sort of big sort of tip from a security perspective is that security is never point in time. Security is, as I mentioned several times, an ongoing sort of process, an ever-moving set of goalposts. And the challenge with that is also making sure that you keep up with the latest sort of developments, the latest approaches. And that doesn't necessarily mean having to re-architect your security every so often. In many cases, it can mean incremental changes based on security, your security risks within your organization. The next big thing is that a lot of people will jump on security bandwagons in that perhaps there's a latest threat that's being talked about in the media or sort of discussed within organizations without really understanding what the risk is to their organization. In many cases, I see almost fashionable security solutions being bolted into people's infrastructure without understanding, is it the right tool in the right place doing the right things? Now, the challenge is that different organizations will have different requirements. If, for example, I'm an organization that doesn't have mobile workers, people come into the office, well, that's actually a different set of risks than if I have sort of a distributed organization across the country and maybe even the world and have a lot of devices like cell phones and other convergent devices connected onto my network. And so in many cases, I really encourage people to understand the risks to their organization. I'd say that another big tip would be, well, I've talked about taking a very much more holistic approach to security. And that is remarkably useful from the point of view of the effectiveness of security within an organization. So understanding that security goes beyond things like the point-in-time solutions. It goes beyond the sort of perimeter of the network or sort of putting a firewall in or whatever the sort of tools and technologies or processes that you've adopted. Part of the reason for that is that in so many instances where I've seen security breaches, it's the area that hadn't really been considered that became essentially the weakest link. So it could be as simple as training, awareness, and education for users on a network, or it could be, for example, a realization that about things like the convergence of technology. And so the important part about that is we see a lot of consumer devices creeping into the enterprise. For example, a cell phone that also has access to the email. Storage devices like MP3 players and others that are very useful to be able to transfer data. But if the data is going onto these devices, how does the organization manage and maintain and secure that information? And there are certainly ways to do it. The challenge, of course, is organizations understanding that those risks exist. And so the sort of the big ask in many cases is to take that more holistic approach and understand, for example, from the perspective of the information, where it's going to be on your network, how it's going to be transmitted, how it's created across its life cycle, because that's absolutely fundamental to understanding how I can effectively implement security within my organization.
Well, this concludes this first part of our podcast series. Today we talked with Bruce Cowper, who's a top internet security authority and the chief security advisor for Microsoft Canada. So I really wanted to thank you, Bruce, for spending some time with us today to discuss these really important aspects of security. And we look forward to the next podcast in this series where we'll drill down even further into other questions about security.
Oh, thanks very much. It's been my pleasure.